back to the Jeff Merrick Show. I'm your host, Matt Marchese, filling in for Jeff, who will be back on Monday. Really looking forward to this conversation with our next guest. He is a veteran of 566 regular season games and 32 playoff games with the Blue Jackets and the Avalanche. Now he's a co-founder and director of recruitment and development at Cal Sports Management. Matt Calvert is on the line. Matt, how are you today?
I'm doing well. I appreciate you having me on, Matt.
You know, we'll get to the Avs in a second, but I wanted to talk about this, the transition to the agency business. And for some guys, after they retire, you know, and unfortunately for you, it was due to injury, and you're still a young guy. I like to say you're a young guy because we're the same age. But when you had this opportunity, some guys will go into coaching, whether it be in the junior ranks or minor hockey, whatever. Some try to go into scouting. Why was it the agency business for you that made the most sense after your playing career was done?
Well, after I was done playing, I had a pretty significant back surgery, and it was about a 10 to 12 month recovery. And I was actually the development coach for the Brandon Wheat Kings junior hockey team in my hometown here. And I got to see the coaching side of things while I was rehabbing and skate on the ice with the guys January, February, once I started to heal up. And I was really intrigued by it. I love the one-on-one with the guys, not just on the ice, but off the ice, and talking, you know, the ups and downs of junior hockey, pro hockey, you name it. It's a roller coaster ride. So I had always thought agency or that route, you know, might be for me. I'm very pro player. And I think the ability to be a part of many different teams, cheer for many different teams, help guys out in their career. And the one big thing for me is that there's so many good hockey players that get stuck in junior hockey or at the AHL level that were high NHL draft picks. And I just want to try to make a difference. And with my experience and Joe's expertise on the business side, my partner, and hopefully get these kids to the next level and just be a small part of their journey.
The agency, Cal Sports Management, you guys just launched it. And what's the selling point? Like how do you approach, I know it's all fresh and new, but how do you approach players that you're trying to recruit to your company? Is the biggest thing for you just, and I saw it on your website, like I've been there, I know what this is like, and this is why I can help you.
Yeah. You know, there's so many great agents out there, and what me and Joe, how we're going to differentiate ourselves is the business side. Like I said, Joe's a practicing lawyer, and he was actually my agent to finish my career, as well as Colin Wilson. That's where he got his certification. But on the flip side of things, we think we can come at them from two directions. He'll take care of the business side, and that's something I'll learn in time and as we build our networks. And then my title is, you know, head of development and recruitment. And the big part there is like I just touched on, helping guys with my experience, with teammates' experience, calling some of my teammates that have run into similar problems or situations that our clients will eventually go through. And I think the big thing that we hear from a lot of players that want to move on from their agents or have is they don't get enough face time or enough attention. And one thing me and Joe really want to do is build great relationships with their guys. And obviously when you get the bigger agencies, they have a ton of clients and a lot of the big clients as well. And sometimes the guys stuck in the minor leagues that really need the help to get to that next level don't get that FaceTime or those phone calls. And that's something we want to do. And we don't want to grow too big too fast. And if we do, we want to grow with that and be able to support everyone that we decide to represent.
So we're not closing the door on getting into coaching or into player development or anything just yet, right? Like I said, you're a young guy and you have that experience. So this is the start, but it's you haven't closed the door on the other things, correct?
Well, yeah, the beauty of it getting in here is it keeps you in the hockey world. And I have two young boys. They're 4 and 6 years old, very energetic, just started getting into hockey. I got baseball and soccer 4 times a week for them right now. And they need to burn energy, one, but they really love to go learn the team aspect of sports. And for me, that's my number one priority. My number two will be Cal Sports Management. And the big part of that is it gives me independence and me and Joe own our own business and we make our own schedule. We dictate how many guys we have and that's kind of the beauty of it. And then I also get to do the development side. And And I've said all along, I'm not going to be afraid to get in the ice with guys and teach them little tips and tricks. And there's so many great skill coaches out there, and most of these players already have had one since they've been 10, 12 years old. But there's the little things in the game that get you the next level. And one thing that always pops up with young pros is consistency, and young junior players as well. How can I be a pro? And it's kind of what we would always talk about when you were trying to break into the NHL. Like, can this guy do it every day, or can he just have a cup of coffee? And that's one thing I really think I had great leaders to learn from, and I figured out quickly, and it's why I became a career NHLer. So I really hope to pass that on and make a difference in these guys' careers and lives.
A really great career you had. Certainly no slouch. 566 games in the regular season, 32 games in the playoff. Chatting with Matt Calvert here on the Jeff Merrick Show. Matt Marchese hosting. And you know, let's talk about your most recent team, the Colorado Avalanche. And we there was a time when Jared Bednar was on the hot seat, and you know, with the lack of playoff success, you know, not getting past the second round, there were a lot of calls for Jared Bednar to be fired. And, you know, you look at it, and one of the things you talked about in terms of players is consistency. Well, one of those things is, you know, having the same head coach for a significant period of time. It looks like it's paid off finally as the team goes to the Stanley Cup final. What was your experience with Jared Bednar?
Well, when I first met Jared Bednar, he was my power play coach in Springfield when I played for the Springfield Falcons, the minor leagues. And that, I believe that was the lockout year. So my last year in the minors, the first half of it. And what a great guy. And then he morphed into a head coach with Cleveland. And Nolan Pratt, the D coach, was also in Springfield as well and graduated onto Colorado with Bedsy. And the big thing for me is, you know, in the media, you can look from the outside and say, hey, they're not, they're not achieving their goal, the Stanley Cup. At the end of the day, there's 32 teams and one team wins, and it takes a little luck and it takes a lot of experience to get there. The thing with Bedsy and the whole Colorado organization is patience for me. They when I went in, I signed a 28 or whatever it was, a 3-year deal, and they were pretty transparent with me. They knew they had a great core. They knew Makar was coming. And they said, we got to work on our depth throughout the next few years, and we're going to build kind of piece by piece. And then year one, we were the eighth seed. We snuck into the playoffs, and we ended up, you know, I think we went to game 7 with San Jose in the second round. So I think the trajectory was a little quicker than expected. But that being said, if you're in that locker room and you see the coaching staff and just how, and I don't want to use the wrong word and loose, but how relaxed everyone is and focused on one goal and not going to let the outside noise bother them. You would see why they stuck with Jared Bednar and why he's having success and why those players love playing under him.
When we look at him from afar, you know, when we're watching on TV, he doesn't seem like the rah-rah guy. He seems very kind of level-headed. Is that what makes him so good for this group? Like, you talk about being relaxed as a unit. Is that part of the success that he's having, is just that he doesn't seem to get too high, doesn't seem to get too low? If something happens in a game, he's not going to go out and lambaste somebody in a post-game press conference. He just kind of seems to be on the same level all the time.
In my mind, he's the definition of a new school coach. You know, I think the first, he's a great guy, and I would classify him as a player's coach. And even my first year there, I think he was going through that transition of, like, you know, he wants to be one of the boys, right? And you love that as a player, but you also got to have that professionalism. And you're the guy, you know, healthy scratching Andre Burakovsky in playoffs, or, you know, whoever it is. You're the guy making those tough decisions. So I think he got real comfortable his second year on, you know, where that line is. And yes, he is more laid back, but the one thing he preaches is confidence and creativity. And for a new school guy and all these, for these young kids coming in so skilled now, it's, you know, I was a bottom six guy most of my career. So I got to play with a lot of the young guys, start of their career, the young stars that end up being first, second liners. And these guys come in so talented, and what they need is, a lot of people say, these guys need pats on the back and all that. And a lot of old school guys don't like the new guy's attitude, but the big thing with Bedsy is he's figured out how to teach and coach every personality. And I always go back to, I'm not comparing him to Phil Jackson, but like the MJ documentary with Dennis Rodman, and he kind of let everyone be who they are. He didn't want the mold of one personality, you know, throughout his whole team. And that's something Bedsy does in the whole organization, even from Joe Sakic down, is they let you be you and try to work, you know, put your game into their system and let you create after that. So it was honestly some of the funnest hockey I've ever played in my life in Colorado.
And you can see that now with the way the team is playing. And one of those guys, you talk about the incredible skill level coming in, and we don't have to go any further than Cale Makar. Like he's drawing comparisons to Bobby Orr from Wayne Gretzky, the greatest player of all time, in terms of his impact at both ends of the ice. Now, I'm not going to ask you to compare him to Bobby Orr because I know, like myself, because we're of the same vintage, we didn't see Bobby Orr play. But can you talk to his skill level at both ends of the ice? Because everybody wants to talk about the offense, but I think the most impressive part of his game, because of where he started and where he's come to, is at the defensive side of the ice, because he is so good. He did a great job along with Devon Taves in locking down Connor McDavid, the best player in the game right now. And not only that, he's one of the best technicians at playing the body that I've seen, especially at the speed that he does it.
Well, the big thing goes right back to his skating. And to me, a lot of these young D-men coming in, they all skate so well. It's I make a comparison when I first came to the league, and I saw like an end of an era and the new school coming in my last 3 or 4 years. And when I first came to the league, you go to the blue paint, you know, the other team's blue paint, and you're getting cross-checked, punched, instant scrum. Now I'd go to the blue paint last 3 years, and I would give a little face wash or a little cross-check, and guys would ask me, what are you doing? Why are you hitting me? And all these guys are so skill focused. And to me, there's really no excuse not to be able to defend when you can skate that well. And then you watch Cale Makar, and obviously the most elite skater I've ever seen. I mean, you got Connor McDavid and Nathan MacKinnon up front doing their thing, but the way he opens up his hips and uses his edges and his twitch and his, it's unbelievable. And then we're talking about a defenseman right now. So there is really no excuse for that guy to be beat, you know, because he can always, even if he does get beat, he can always save himself with the way, with his mobility. And it's something that I would preach to my young junior kids. They're such good skaters. And I said, there is no excuse for you to be beat because you were so good on your edges and you skate so well. And Cale is just honestly a generational talent. You talk about Bobby Orr for myself and you know, obviously we didn't watch him or had the pleasure to, but you hear so much about his greatness and how good he was. And Cale Makar is 23 years old, and we're not just talking about a point a game guy or over a point a game guy in playoffs. We're talking about a guy that plays both sides of the puck. So he's going to be an unbelievable talent to watch for hopefully years to come.
Yeah, we certainly are witnessing the beginning. Well, it's already greatness, but certainly the beginning of what could be something even bigger. Matt Calvert joining Matt Marchese here on the Jeff Merrick Show. And, you know, Matt, we can't have a conversation about the Colorado Avalanche and not talk about Nathan MacKinnon, one of the most exciting players to watch. And as the usual host of this show calls him, a rhinoceros on skates. Is that an accurate assessment of Nathan MacKinnon's game?
Extremely accurate. For me, it always comes back to one thing, is his passion and his will to win. And he literally wants to be the best every time he steps on the ice. I've said it multiple times over the last week, and I've had some interviews, and everyone asked me about Cale Makar and Nathan MacKinnon. And this is a guy you want to be around. And people call him abrasive or a rhinoceros or you know, whatever it is. Well, this guy wants you to be better, and he wants himself to be better and wants to be the best possible. And we're talking about a guy that trains with Sidney Crosby, is best friends with him, and got to watch Sid win, you know, multiple cups when he was in his young 20s, and probably uses him as a benchmark and wants to do that exact same thing. So the pressure he puts on himself and the day-to-day of how much he wants to get better, whether it's on or off the ice and in every facet of the game, you know, I was much older than him, and I looked up to him, you know, as a leader. So I can't say enough good things about Nathan MacKinnon, and finally it's paying off for him, and I'm super happy to see it.
Yeah, the one thing that most impresses me about his game is not only the speed at which he plays it, because there are not a lot of players in the game that can do what he does at the speed that he does. You talk about the elite of the elite. But how, like, you talked about just his, you know, people talk about him being abrasive or whatever. And the physicality, you know, there's a lot of skill guys that won't do the things that Nathan MacKinnon does. They won't go to the areas that Nathan MacKinnon does. But like you said, he's not satisfied. And you can see it, especially in these playoffs. He wants this bad. He knows in his own mind that he hasn't accomplished anything until he wins that Stanley Cup. And that drive and the willingness to do whatever it takes is really coming through in these playoffs.
No, it definitely is. And you can just see the maturity. I text Linus Scott the other day, and you just, you know, I keep in touch with him here and there, and I don't want to bug him too much during playoffs, but you just see in the interviews, you see the team message, you see the experience coming around, and, you know, they've been through the failures the last 3 years, and guys like Nate, they're saying the right things. You see how dialed they are, and it's all in one goal. And everyone's producing on that team, and everyone's on the same page. And it's great to see. And I really hope they finish it off, whether it's the Lightning or the Rangers that end up getting through. But it's just really cool to see, especially being as close as I was to it for the last 3 years, is the maturity in these kids. And like, these guys are in their mid-20s, you know, Landy, I guess, later 20s, but, you know, Makar, early 20s, and then Rantanen as well. You get to watch these guys grow and become the players they are, and it's really cool to see.
One more before we let you go here. You played a little bit with Nazem Kadri. He's got the thumb issue. You know him a little bit. Is he going to be playing in the Stanley Cup final?
Well, I've actually been asked this question as well, and I'll say this about Naz. What a positive, like, optimistic guy. I disliked Naz before we played together, and I dislike a lot of players that, you know, you kind of got to build that up. You got to build the hate against your opponents at times, especially to play the way I did. And me and Naz fought in Toronto, and you know, he's a rat, much like myself, and getting under a guy's skins. And then when we met on the plane, I was, you know, I was like, man, you know, I don't like this guy on the ice. And we became like great friends right away. And it always works out that way. Usually the guy you dislike the most on the ice is your best buddy when you play with him. But for Nazem Kadri, I'll tell you this, if it's not going to hurt his future in a massive way, and he's able to go, and the doctors, you know, give him a green light or leave it up to him, he will be on the ice. And then there's also the flip side of things. As a player, can you help your team? And, you know, what does that look like? Is that power play? Is that less minutes? Or are you going to hurt your team? And that's a huge decision you got to make, because, you know, the Avs are winning by committee, and he's been unbelievable this year, and obviously a great second line center and first line PP guy for them. But at the same time, is can he help the Colorado Avalanche win a Stanley Cup? And that's a question he's going to have to ask himself. And if he can do anything to steer in the right direction and help out, then he will be in the lineup, because he's got a lot of heart and passion, and I know he wants to win more than anyone out there.
Well, Matt, this has been a great conversation. Thank you so much for taking some time today, and good luck with Cal Sports Management. I know being a former player, just staying in the game is important, and I know you're going to do a great job with it. So good luck.
Thanks a lot for having me on, Matt, and take care, and we'll see you around.
There he goes, Matt Calvert from Cal Sports Management, newly founded Cal Sports Management, and former Columbus Blue Jacket and Colorado Avalanche forward. You know, my favorite takeaway from talking there was just the idea of, you know, Nazem Kadri and I played similar roles. We were kind of rats, and we wanted to get under the skin of the other team's players, and then we become best friends. He's right. That happens so often, because when you have two players like that, they understand how tough that job is. Listen, you get punched in the face a lot when you do that job. It's not an easy job. It's certainly not being an enforcer tough, but it's not easy. You got to go to the dirty areas. You got to piss people off, and you're going to take a slash here, a punch in the face there, whatever the case may be, a cross check. But you respect the guy who does that job, which is why they became good friends. Like, that to me, a tale as old as time as it pertains to the National Hockey League. You hear those stories all the time, and you know, it rings true wherever you go, doesn't matter the team, doesn't matter the player, it always happens. So a very big thank you to Matt for joining us. And again, good luck with his new venture. I also like the conversation about Nathan MacKinnon. Nathan MacKinnon knows what he needs to do to win. He will do anything to win. And the Colorado Avalanche are on their way. I mean, they are going to, it doesn't matter who it is, the Lightning or the Rangers, whoever it is, Colorado Avalanche are going to be a very, very tough out. Coming up in the second hour of the program, Scott Laughlin from NHL Network Radio's The Morning Skate will join me, recap last night's game, and we'll talk about some coaching vacancies and see where Scotty thinks the best opportunity lies for a head coach. And then we've got Mike Zeisberger from NHL.com, again, talking about last night. And then we will look at the Toronto Maple Leafs offseason and all the questions coming up. That's all coming up here on the Jeff Merrick Show. Matt Marchese filling in. Back in a few.
Breaking down everything in Leafsland better than anyone. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Hour two of the Jeff Merrick Show. Matt Marchese filling in for Jeff, who is on assignment, but will be back on Monday. Or at least that's what he tells me. These are the conversations that I have with Jeff. I assume he's going to be back on Monday. The Tampa Bay Lightning, one win away from another Stanley Cup final. Ho-hum. Down 2-0 in the series. Up 3-2. Doesn't matter. At home, on the road, the Tampa Bay Lightning are an absolute juggernaut in these playoffs and in previous playoffs. And joining me to talk about that and more is my friend from NHL Network Radio's The Morning Skate, Scott Laughlin, joins me. Scotty, how are you today, buddy? We got Scott there. Oh, I heard something.
Are you there, Matt?
There, I got you now. How are you?
All right. Great stuff. How are you?
I'm good. How was Wonderland yesterday?
Well, it was great to watch. I'm not the type that goes on rides. I like to watch people go on rides and scream and that sort of thing. But for me, it's just a matter of sitting back and watching and being safe and making sure that I don't have to suffer any sort of cardiac arrest.
You see, you and me should go to Wonderland together, Scotty, because I'm the exact same way. I can't go on the rides. I went on a few when I was a kid, and I was like, nope. I have a fear of falling. I have a fear of heights, whatever you want to call it. It is absolutely terrifying to me. And saying that as a 33-year-old man makes me sound like a big suck, but I don't care. I hate rides. So you and me would make great friends.
Yeah.
We could share a funnel cake.
Well, I'll tell you what, Matt. I mean, I'm the type of guy that goes to Center Island. When I go to Centerville, I mean, years and years ago, when I had a little bit more guts, I guess, I went on the log ride, and I went on that a couple of times, and that's probably the extent of my excitement. That's just probably as much of a risk as I want to take.
I knew I liked you, Scotty. I knew it. So the Lightning last night, and it just seems like this is the way that this series has kind of gone. You know, game one, there was some rust, especially with Andrei Vasilevskiy, even though I don't think he played all that bad. Game two, you could see them start to come around a little bit. And ever since then, John Cooper's made the adjustments that he's needed to make. That line of Killorn, Hagel, and Cirelli has been incredible. And Andre Palat has just stepped up. It just feels like Tampa Bay, it doesn't matter which direction the series goes, however you want to play it, they're going to put their best foot forward. And it just, they feel not unbeatable because obviously they lose in the playoffs, but over the course of a series, they just feel unbeatable at this point.
Well, isn't that the sign of a great team too, right, Matt? I mean, that they can win 2-1, which essentially was what happened last night with the empty netter, of course, to make it 3-1. But they can beat you in a defensive-type game. They can outscore you if you want to be beaten that way as well. Take your pick. I mean, pick your poison when it comes to playing the Tampa Bay Lightning. And, look, I agree with you. The first couple of games, whether it was the layoff that they had or adjustments that had to be made, it was Tampa Bay that was the second-best team on the ice, and the Rangers looked like they were going to run through this thing, and they were going to just end this so-called, you know, modern-day dynasty that the Tampa Bay Lightning are on the verge of accomplishing here, and all of a sudden, the last three games, it's been totally different. And you just look at Tampa Bay, not only last night getting better throughout the contest, But I think throughout this series too, Matt, getting better throughout the series, and maybe you could take it back as far as, you know, late in the opening round against the Leafs. Because up until that point, we thought that they were vulnerable and, you know, they were one shot away from going home and that would be the end of it. And the Leafs would finally advance to the second round. Well, look, we all know how that kind of turned out. And when it came to Game 6 and Game 7 against the Leafs, it seems like they, and this includes, of course, their goaltender, number 88, who just has a great, great knack for being able to smell the finish line. They just were much better in 6 and 7. And then they obviously rolled through the Florida Panthers, started off, as you say, a little bit sluggish against the New York Rangers, but have picked up steam along the way. So this is a team that's in a real, real good position to make some modern day NHL history. And if they can join the Islanders as the last team to win 3 straight championships, they will have accomplished something special. There's no doubt about that.
I said this last week with Jonathan Davis, and I'll say it again because it makes me sound a lot smarter. Although some people are going to call me an idiot, which is fine. But I believe that if Tampa Bay can win a 3rd straight Stanley Cup in the salary cap era with how much roster turnover there is, that to me, that is the most impressive dynasty in NHL history. And I know, and it's not because of the players that are on it. They are going to have Hall of Famers. They're going to have a Hall of Fame coach. I understand all that. But for me, it's just how impressive it's been because of the roster turnover, because you're limited to how much you can spend. That to me is more impressive than the Montreal Canadiens winning 5 straight cups in the 70s, despite having all of these incredible players. It's so much harder to win now. People don't win back-to-back cups in this era, let alone 3 in a row.
Well, look, I think you could make that point, and you could make that case, Matt, as you are. And I think that has to be taken into consideration, that you are going to lose players. There's no question. When you have success, players need to get paid. They need to be taken care of. Now, has the Lightning benefited from guys like Stamkos and Hedman and Kucherov maybe taking less than they're worth in other places with other teams than they could have fetched on the open market? Yeah, they've benefited from it. But, you know, they're in a situation where the state that they play in, you know, has no state taxes. And these players just wanted to be a part of continuing to win, be successful each and every season, having a chance to win a Stanley Cup. They've won it now back-to-back, looking for a three-peat now, too. So you could make that case. There's no question. Look, I used to do a show with Dennis Potvin, and Dennis and I worked together for years. And Dennis used to tell me he always felt like in 1984, if the NHL had not gone to a 2-3-2 best-of-7 format, he still feels like the Islanders could have won 5 straight championships, of course, which would have been something back then from 1980 through 83 is what they ended up with. It could have been 80 through 84. Denny always told me that if it wasn't for the 2-3-2 and having to stay out there in Edmonton for that end of things, that they would have gotten back to Uniondale. They could have won the series at that point. Would-haves, could-haves, should-haves. Regardless, it was an Islanders dynasty that we always look upon with so much in the way of admiration. We do so, of course, with the Canadians, like you say, in the late 1970s. The Oilers win 5 and 7, going back right through 1990 and winning, of course, in 1990 without Gretzky and without Glenn Sather as the head coach. But you're right, there's no question. 3 and 6 for Chicago was impressive. 3 straight in this era of the salary cap would be extra special, and you'd be able to bang the drum loud and clear for everybody to hear that this is, in fact, perhaps the greatest dynasty given the circumstances.
Yeah, that's why I'm praying for a cup win, so I look smart for once in my life. So last night, we watch Andre Vasilevsky get beat blocker side again. To me, it's one of the more curious things that we've seen in these playoffs. And yet, you know, it really felt like, and Kelly Rudy brought it up in the intermission last night, mm-hmm. on the broadcast for Sportsnet, and he said, like, you got to change it up a little bit. And, you know, they tried eventually, but they almost got into this mindset of, listen, to beat this guy, we have to go blocker side. And that, to me, just kind of set them back a little bit, because it almost seemed like they were laser focused on, we need to go blocker side, we need to go blocker side, and maybe, you know, taking away some opportunities that they had in other parts of the net.
Yeah, I think it's a great point that Kelly brought up, too. And look, so everybody's making adjustments along the way, right? So, I mean, the Rangers are thinking we're going high blocker, high blocker, high blocker. Well, Vasilevsky is smart enough, obviously, to figure that out. He's going to make some adjustments to his game and the way he plays as well. Now, as it turns out, the goal that beat him looked like it did go off the stick of Stamkos. So the Lindgren shot from the sideboards goes in off the stick of Stamkos, and Vasilevsky could be excused if he couldn't get in front of that puck. But he's going to make some adjustments along the way. Look, Matt, I was at the 2013 Stanley Cup Final, and I was in Boston when the Hawks were taking on the Bruins. And the Bruins at that point, if you remember back, were having a great deal of success in beating Corey Crawford high glove side, right? Every goal was going in high glove side, high glove side, high glove side. I remember having to be in the dressing room after a game and asking him about that and how testy he got, because it was starting to get to him that he was getting these questions about all the goals going in high glove side, high glove side. Again, he made the adjustments in the final couple of games of that series, and it paid off for Chicago. So I think that there's no question that Vasilevsky has clued into what they're trying to do to beat him, and I think that that's why part of the reason why it's been so difficult to beat him lately, because he's made the adjustments. And look, ultimately, at the end of the day, if the Rangers can't score 5-on-5 and get a little bit more from even strength situations, relying less and less on the power play, maybe it's not going to matter in the end. And maybe we're talking about Tampa Bay against Colorado.
Yeah, the sequence for me that Vasilevsky just kind of turned the game was, it was about the 9:30 mark of the third period, and Adam Fox freezes the defenseman. I can't remember what it was, but he kind of slides off the screen. He froze him so bad. And then he makes the save on Fox. Puck goes behind the net, and Kopp has a chance to wrap it around, and Vasilevsky just goes post to post, showing that agility and flexibility that he has, makes the save, ends up freezing the puck, and Tampa stays tied. Those are the types of moments that a goalie like Andre Vasilevsky can provide. We've seen him look vulnerable at points in these playoffs. You mentioned against the Leafs, where the whole Lightning team looked vulnerable. He was rock solid against the Panthers. That's very well documented. But even in this series, you know, people started to think, well, maybe 6 in the first game, not so sure about that, but he's been incredible in the last 3.
Yeah, and you look at what he's done, too, and the numbers that we have seen him put up, right? You know, to get to the wins that he's had so far, I think it's now 60 wins in 97 playoff games for Vasilevsky. And I got to be honest with you, Matt, earlier in the playoffs when people said, well, you know, Vasilevsky's the greatest goaltender of all time, he's the greatest goaltender of all time, I'm not prepared to go there just yet. But certainly at his age, having accomplished what he's accomplished already, we are going to be talking about this here as the years go by. If he continues at this rate, when it's all said and done, he might be there at the top of the heap. And we're talking ahead of the Brodeurs and the Patrick Waughs and the Dominic Hasek's. We might actually be talking about that when you talk about team success, individual awards that have come his way. Again, to get to the number of victories he's had in the playoffs, only, I believe, 4 other goaltenders, led by Grant Fuhrer, who got to 60 and 83 contests in the playoffs. He was the guy to do it in the fewest amount of games. Right now, you're looking at Vassy being 5th on that list behind some pretty good goaltenders.
Yeah, it's amazing to see, like you said, what he's accomplished in what feels like such a short time. You could really make the argument that he may be the best money goalie that we see. I know that you know, a lot of people talked about Billy Smith in that regard, but we can certainly make the case that Andre Vasilevsky is certainly in that conversation just because of the success he has in the playoffs. Scott Laughlin from NHL Network Radio's The Morning Skate joining Matt Marchese here on the Jeff Merrick Show. The other guy that has playoff success, and it seems like it's at the right time. You know, Braden Point goes down with the injury in round 1 against the Leafs in game 7, and you're always looking for somebody to take over, you know, that spot, or at least take some of the pressure off of your other stars. And for a point in time, Nick Paul was that guy. And then we saw, you know, Brandon Hagel play really well and Cirelli play well. But now in this series, it's the Andre Palat show. And last night he scores another game winner. He adds to his team record of game winning goals in the playoffs. This is another guy who he just fits what Tampa Bay does. Whatever the role is, you want him in a checking role, hey, Andre Palat can play that role early in his career. You want him to play on the top 2 lines, Andre Palat can do that. And now, you know, playing with Kucherov and Stamkos, he's taken some of that pressure off of those guys. And he's had a really, really incredible series and setting himself up for a big payday as an unrestricted free agent if he decides to test the market.
Yeah, Palat's a UFA, as we know. Nick Paul's a UFA as well, and he's playing for a contract. Seems like he's fit like a glove down there in Tampa as well. So you're right. I mean, Palat is a jack of all trades. He's almost like a Zach Hyman for fans of the Leafs and now fans of the Oilers, obviously. But he's the type of guy that can play up and down your lineup, can play in your top three lines in any sort of role that you want him to play in. I think John Cooper said it best a little bit earlier in the series, Matt, when he said that he's a blue-collar player that plays with white-collar line mates. Like, he's the type of guy that can muck and grind and he can dig pucks out. He's also the type of guy that has enough skill to certainly fit in with the guys that you mentioned to start producing some points. Now, last night, he was in the right place at the right time for the game-winning goal. There's no question about it. Gives Sergachev a lot of credit for what he did last night in firing the puck from the point. And, of course, the traffic in front was really seemingly the only way you were going to beat Igor Shesterkin as well. So, you know, he's the type of guy that's contributed in so many different ways. He's been so instrumental and integral to what they've achieved here the past couple of years in winning these Stanley Cups. And we talk about him being a poor man's Marian Hossa. That's kind of what he is. He's not as big as Marian, but he plays that same sort of style of game where he can play it heavy or he can play it light. And in the end, you're talking about tremendous production. I'm just happy he didn't get hit by that flying elbow from Jacob Trouba last night, because that would have been serious for Palat, but that would have been serious as well for Jacob Trouba, who might have been done till next season had that elbow connected with Palat's head.
Oh, he's, you know what, I as much as I don't like to see that kind of stuff, I do love watching Jacob Trouba, because he's just a throwback. Like, he's you know, I had a conversation with Sam Rosen last week about how we make a big deal about, not we, but a lot of people that watch hockey now make a big deal of big hits and think that a big hit is dirty. But 5, 10, 15 years ago, a big clean hit was celebrated. Now it's like, oh my God, is he going to get suspended for a clean hit? And that's why I kind of like Jacob Trouba, because it takes me back to a time where, and I sound like an old man saying this, it takes me back to a time where a clean hit was a clean hit and that's it. And he delivers those on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Last night notwithstanding.
Well, yeah, I would agree with you, Matt. I mean, I'm like you. I like to see big hits, and I've talked about it earlier in the playoffs when people said, well, he's got to be suspended. He's got to be suspended. If you watch the replays, I mean, his hits are just sort of on that borderline, right? And we looked at his hits, and we said, you know what? He's not going to get suspended. That hit, the main point of contact was through the body. Did he collect the head afterwards? Yes. But the main point of contact on a couple of previous incidents with number 8 for the New York Rangers was clean. It was the body, and then it was the head. So he was somewhat exonerated as far as the eyes of the NHL's Department of Player Safety in New York are concerned. You're right, though. I mean, last night would have gotten him suspended. There's no question about it. You could watch the elbow. It comes out from the body, whereas we saw the previous hits that he had earlier in the playoffs where the elbow was kind of tucked. This one was clearly almost a chicken wing, and I'm just happy it didn't make contact with Palat's head. But generally speaking, I'm with you. I like the fact that there is still some physicality. I think there are certain guys, and there are fewer and fewer of them around the league, to your point, Matt, where you have to keep the opposition honest when they come across the blue line. You can think of guys like Braden McNabb, right? You can think about Lindgren and Trouba with the New York Rangers. I think there's somebody on every team that maybe is that guy you have to watch out for. For Tampa Bay, maybe it's Big Chernak. Maybe he's the type of guy that can turn your lights out if you don't come across the blue line with your head up and on a bit of a swivel. So I'm happy that part of the game is not lost, but last night that was pretty close for Trouba, and as it turns out, for Andre Palat.
Yeah, and you know, on the Rangers side, I know we've talked a lot about Tampa, and for good reason. They've been incredible the last three games, but for the Rangers, it really felt like they were in that game last night. They got scored on with just under 2 minutes left in the third period for, you know, to go behind. It's not as if they've played poorly, although I didn't like their game in game four, but it's not as if they've been out of these games. It just feels like Tampa has found their groove, and the Rangers just don't have an answer for them, even at home right now.
Look, I think if Gerard Gallant could take that game from last night and transport it down to Amalie Arena for game number 6 tomorrow night, I think he'd take it, because I think he'd think his team would be in the game, and with a break here or there, And we harken back to last night, right, when Andrew Kopp, with 6 minutes left, puts it basically almost onto the stick of Ryan Strome, as it turned out. And that picture that's making the rounds on social media is going to be out there forever, right? The Rangers fans, if they lose, are going to be looking back at that. What if Ryan Strome puts that puck in? What if it's an inch or two closer to his blade? He puts the puck in. Maybe that stands up as the game winner. And who knows? Maybe that could have been the series winner, ultimately, for the New York Rangers. Now, there's still a lot to play for New York, obviously, with their season being on the line tomorrow night. But I really do think that if Gerard Gallant could take that game and transport it down to West Central Florida, I think he would do that, because I think he would think that his team would be in there with a chance, maybe a couple of extra saves from Shesterkin. Maybe he tracks the puck a little better through a maze of players. Maybe a guy like Strome converts under an opportunity like that, and all of a sudden you're going back for a game seven in your own barn where you've been really, really good. You know, 8-2 here during the playoffs at the Garden. So I think that all is not lost for the New York Rangers. I think at the end of the day, though, Matt, I mean, it keeps coming back to, hey, can this team score even strength? Can they score in five-on-five situations? They've got the top power play in the National Hockey League as far as the playoffs go right now, and that's a good news, bad news. Good news is that you're converting with the man advantage. The bad news is right now it seems like you can't score five-on-five, so you're having to rely on your power play proficiency to get the job done. So I think they're going to continue to be in search of even strength goals. If they get a couple tomorrow night and continue with this proficiency on the power play, I think we'll get what I want to see anyway. I don't know about you. I'm a neutral hockey fan at this point. I want to see a game seven.
Yeah, I want to see a game seven for selfish reasons, because I said that the Lightning were going to win in seven. Again, Scotty, I'm trying to make myself look smarter here. So if I can get something right.
I said the Lightning would win in six, Matt, but I'm willing to forego my prediction so I can watch a seventh and deciding game on Tuesday.
You're a better man than I. We know that. We both know that. I did, you know, you talked about special teams there. I did want to get your take on the Keandre Miller penalty, because I asked Elliot about it, and I know he didn't like it. I didn't like it either. It looks like the stick rides up and hits him on the hand, Perry. It's one of those calls that in the playoffs, I just have a really hard time with making that call, because I understand it's in the rule book, whatever, but maybe it should just be out of the rule book, because that to me is just, he's putting his stick in a lane to stop a guy from getting a scoring chance. He's not hooking. He's not holding. He's not slashing. He's just doing his job.
Well, I mean, look, we've seen that call throughout the course of the playoffs, right? Anything near the hands seems to get called, and that was a matter of inches as well, too. We talk about the fine line at winning and losing and different things that pop up during the course of a game as well, Matt. And, you know, that was one of those situations, because you're right, it started on the stick, and it looked like it was a great defensive play, seemed to ride up closer to his glove, and then he can't get the shot off, and the arm goes up, and it's a penalty. Look, that could have gone either way. Very, very close from being a great defensive play from Keandre Miller to all of a sudden being in the penalty box. And, you know, it has been a call that's been made. So I think that anything close to the glove, and this one was really, really close, I think was going to get called. And everybody screams out for consistency. I think you had some consistency there in the fact that the stick was in on the stick, slid up towards the glove, and they made the call. So, look, Tampa Bay's got a power play too. Obviously, it's not quite as good as the Rangers have had during the course of the postseason. But if you look over the last 5 years, I certainly don't have the numbers in front of me, but over the last 5 years or so, Tampa Bay would be right up there amongst the league's best in terms of their proficiency. We often talk about Stamkos in the Ovechkin-type position with the one-timers and such, and Kucherov on the other side with the cross-ice feeds that sometimes he can pot as well. So, yeah, anytime you take a penalty against Tampa Bay, not quite as potent are they as the Rangers with the men advantage, but they can do some damage, as we know.
Yeah, it's a scary, scary power play. And then you put that rat Corey Perry in front of the net, and it's the perfect combination. And I say rat affectionately, because I respect that game. One more before we let you go here. There's a lot of coaching vacancies. And I asked Jeff this question yesterday, and I'm really curious to get your thoughts. Which of those vacancies is the most intriguing? Because I went with Detroit because they have the stud defenseman already. I think Nedeljkovic is a better goalie than what he showed this year. I think they just need to bring in a coach that maybe can, you know, refine them a little bit defensively, but there's certainly a lot of firepower up front. Which team for you is the most intriguing if you're a head coach looking for a job?
We were talking about Detroit earlier today, too. And, look, I wouldn't put it past Steve Yzerman to go out and get somebody out of left field, right? If we saw somebody that was a bit of a surprise somewhere off the board, it wouldn't shock us because Stevie Yzerman does what Stevie Yzerman wants to do, right? He's going to march to the beat of his own drummer. He could care less what people are saying. We hearken back to selecting Mo Sider, number 6 overall at the draft a number of years ago, and people were like, wow, this guy went, you know, markedly higher than we ever expected him to. Looked like he knew what he was talking about, certainly, when he made that selection. So I think that Detroit thing could be something off the board, even though you hear about, you know, David Quinn and Bruce Cassidy being candidates there. I brought it up earlier today. You know, we talk about the former Leafs assistant, Jim Hiller, too, and he was with Mike Babcock for a season in Detroit and then came to Toronto. So who knows if some of these assistants are going to get further looks as well. Brad Shaw, Luke Richardson, the names go on and on, right? And then we've got the established head coaches that are out there as well. I would have to say that the ones that maybe intrigue me the most are the teams that are probably closest to either winning a Stanley Cup or contending for a Stanley Cup. And I would probably rank them, I think, Matt, Vegas, Florida, and Winnipeg. Like, these ones to me are very, very intriguing because we know Vegas on paper has got a great team. And I know Jeff talked about it yesterday, the questions and goal that they've got with their situation with Brossoit and certainly with Robin Leonard and Logan Thompson just might be the guy of the future there in Vegas before it's all said and done. I think they're intriguing because of all the money and big time talent that they've got on their roster. I think Florida, for obvious reasons, right? You've got a President's Trophy winning team that just, for some reason, just couldn't step on the gas at playoff time. Sure, they beat the Capitals the way that they did in 6 games, but they came up short and flamed out against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Somebody out there maybe can give them that extra push to get them across the finish line. And Winnipeg, we've been talking about them for years, too. When you can start with a Hellebuck in goal, and you've got a Morrissey on defense, and you've got what you've got up front with Scheifele and Wheeler and Kyle Connor and Nikolai Ehlers, there's more than enough talent there in Winnipeg for that team to win as well. So if that's Barry Trotz essentially coming home, maybe if it's another big name that's out there, maybe it's them. But I tell you, those three situations, because those teams, I don't want to say they're stacked, but they're very, very talented teams that maybe just need that extra boost to get across the finish line to win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, the Barry Trotz one in Winnipeg is really intriguing to me because I just look at Barry Trotz's history as a head coach, and he's won with a lack of talent. Let's face it. Mm-hmm. And it's high end offensive talent, maybe not defensive talent, because he's had that. But if you look at what he did in Nashville, Washington, he had offensive talent and he won a Stanley Cup. The Islanders got to the conference finals despite, you know, not having a whole heck of a lot of, you know, elite offensive talent. I think that Barry Trotz in Winnipeg is a great fit. That's just going to come down to whether Barry Trotz, he's going to have his pick of the litter. Wherever he wants to go, that's basically where he's going to end up here.
Yeah, I think everybody is just assuming that when Barry Trotz makes his decision as to where he and his family are going to call home, that all of a sudden the dominoes start to go. Then the race is on for the next guy and the next guy and the next guy. Look, I think, you know, Bruce Cassidy coming on the market here in recent days as well has really opened up a different element to this altogether. Like, I really think highly of this head coach, and, you know, not once did he miss the playoffs as the head coach of the Boston Bruins. Now, granted, he knew the organization. He was in Providence for about 8 years before he got his opportunity for the last 6 with the Boston Bruins. But here's a guy that was one win away from winning a Stanley Cup championship in Boston, and they just came up short, of course, on home ice and disappointing the way that they did. But this is a winning head coach. This is a guy who's had a lot of recent success. So I do agree that Barry's the hottest guy out there. Once Barry makes his decision, you go from there. I know John Tortorella appears to be reportedly in line for a second interview in Philadelphia. Barry Trotz also on their radar as well. But to me, I would look past Bruce Cassidy at any point in time as well. I think that he'll have a job if he wants it. And by virtue of what he said yesterday, Matt, it seemed like he said if it's a good situation and a good fit for he and his family, he'll do it. He doesn't want to just sit back and watch hockey like the rest of us and collect a paycheck for another year because he still is under contract to the Boston Bruins. He wants to coach because he said, that's what I do. I think he's going to be given that opportunity.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one with Bruce Cassidy. A very, very intriguing name in the coaching circles. Scotty, thanks so much. You took a lot of time out of your day for me, and I appreciate it as always. Have a good weekend and enjoy game 6 tomorrow. I can't say that I'm praying for a game 7, but it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world either.
No, it certainly wouldn't be, Matt. Thanks for having me as always. Thank you.
There you go. Scott Laughlin from NHL Network Radio's The Morning Skate. I did want to get a Bruce Cassidy little tidbit in here. This is from Ian McLaren on Twitter, covers the Bruins, the Locked On Bruins podcast, I believe it is. Cassidy talking about the effect on his family, and this is my absolute favorite thing. He told his son to use words if kids chirp him about his dad's coaching record, but to come out swinging if they say something about his mom or sister. What a beauty. I love Bruce Cassidy so much more after hearing that. So I hope that Bruce Cassidy gets a job sooner rather than later. Mike Zeisberger from NHL.com joins me next on the Jeff Merrick Show. Matt Marchese filling in. We're going to chat some Leafs. We're going to chat some Stanley Cup Finals. We're going to get Mike's take on if the Rangers have enough to get back in this series and force a Game 7. That's all coming up on the Jeff Merrick Show right here on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Everything Raptors, before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Final segment of the week here with Jeff Merrick Show. Matt Marchese filling in for Jeff. We will be back on Monday, or like I said, it will be so good. I'll find out at some point. I will let you all know. But in the meantime, one of my friends, known this guy since I started in this business, and he's been nothing but gracious with his time, and he's taken some more time for me today, and I greatly appreciate it. Mike Zeisberger from NHL.com. Big Z, how's it going, bud?
Doing great. I mean, with that intro, I mean, God, we've known each other now for what, the way you paint it, decades and decades and decades. No, joking aside, it's been my pleasure, and I know you've got a young family, and that makes me feel young. So, way to go, buddy.
Thanks, pal. Yeah, we've known each other for going on 10 years now since I met you doing Roundtable. So, it's been a time, Mike. It's definitely been a time. Wanted to start things off here, just recapping what we saw last night. It's gotten to the point now where with the Tampa Bay Lightning, I just expect them to win every Stanley Cup now because they can't do any wrong, it seems. They get down in a series and it just doesn't matter. They storm back, they're up 3-2, and one win away from their third straight Stanley Cup final appearance.
Well, I mean, let's rewind about a month, and I know a lot of your listeners don't want to hear this, but look, I mean, you have to put the dagger in the vampire when you get a chance. And the Maple Leafs had that, you know, in the third period of Game 6 and overtime of Game 6 and Game 7. And no matter what, you know, you can argue about the officiating, whatever. They were one shot away. And in the end, in Game 7, Nick Paul outscored the entire Maple Leafs team. You look at the summary, that's the bottom line. They have been without Braden Point, who has scored the most playoff goals in the previous two playoffs than anybody else. You never hear complaining. You never hear whining. They go up against the Florida Panthers, and there was one game where it looked like an assembly line, Matty, of guys going into the trainer's room and coming out, never complaining. You just keep going. They lose the first two games to the Rangers, and it just, you know, it's machine-like. And, you know, you've got Palat, you know, coming up big in a couple of games late. Sergachev yesterday. So it's not always the Kucherovs, the Stamkos is coming through. But, you know, they get supplemental scoring. And they just play with the grit and a fearlessness. Like, no matter what happens in a series, no matter what happens in a game, they have the confidence that they can win. So, I mean, if they win this series, and I picked them to do that before the series started, going up against Colorado, I mean, that I think that the Avs will be the toughest out that they've seen so far. So I'm not going to award them the cup yet, but I can understand voting against this team. You take a risk, you take that in your own hands, because this team – we talk about intangibles sometimes, which I think is a term in sports that is overused. But with the Lightning, it very much fits because they just – I know it's a cliche, but they always seem to find a way.
Yeah, and they just know how to win. You know, you talk about not doesn't matter the style, it doesn't matter who the team is. They've won 10 straight playoff series. They're well on their way to winning an 11th straight, and I've said this on this show before. It doesn't matter who comes into the system. You know, whether it's Corey Perry at the beginning of the year, whether it's Pat Maroon in a previous year, whether it's, you know, Nick Paul or Brandon Hagel, like, let's keep going down the list. Zach Bogosian. These guys come in and they just fall in line. Like, I use the analogy of the New England Patriots in the NFL. Maybe not now, but when Tom Brady was there, they sometimes didn't have superstar players on both sides of the ball, but you went in, it was the Patriot way, and the Patriot way was going to win. That's exactly what this feels like with the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Well, remember, Maddie, at the beginning of the playoffs, there was a narrative as the Leafs prepared to play the Lightning that the one Achilles heel with this Lightning team, other than fatigue of winning two consecutive Stanley Cups and going through those grinds, was that, oh, well, the Lightning, their third line is totally gone, and who are they going to fill it in with? Well, you just mentioned three guys. Brandon Hagel looks like a different player now than when he first came. I mean, he had offensive upside, but the grit this guy has shown, he's getting in people's faces. He's hard on the forecheck. He's bought into the system. Corey Perry, we already knew about. I mean, you know, everybody says the game's getting too fast for him. Well, not when you're planted in front of the goalie and no, you know, we always talk about with the Patriots, which you astutely brought up, know your role. Well, Corey Perry knows his role and he plays it very well. And getting Nick Paul from Ottawa, Julian Brisbois deserves a lot of credit for the way that he's managed to replace some of the players that have left. But, you know, it starts and stops with Andre Vasilevsky. And it's funny because, you know, much like the Leafs series, he was kind of lukewarm at the beginning of this series, too. But as the series go on and on and on, he gets better and better and better. And, you know, when the Rangers opened the scoring last night, I mean, it was from a bad angle shot that was deflected. I'm sure he'd like to have that back. But, you know, when it counted in the third period, he more than made up for it. And, you know, I mean, if this guy backstops them to another Stanley Cup, you have to start talking about him, if not already, as one of the best goaltending performers in the Stanley Cup final of all time. I don't think you can deny what he's doing right now. And, you know, I mean, remember at the beginning of this Rangers series where everybody's chanting, Igor's better. Well, can we say that right now? I'm not sure you can when you look at the scoreboard and the Lightning lead this series 3-2.
I brought this up with Scott Laughlin in the last segment. I brought this up last week, and I'm going to keep bringing it up because I think I'm going to end up looking smart after all this is done. I said that if the Lightning win the Stanley Cup here a third time in a row, in a salary cap era, it's the most impressive dynasty that we've seen in NHL history, not because of the players. They'll have their Hall of Famers. They're going to have their Hall of Fame coach. And certainly that the Montreal Canadiens dynasty of five straight cups was something that we will never see again. But because of the salary cap, because of the roster turnover, to me, this is the most impressive feat that we've seen in NHL history if they can win a third straight Stanley Cup.
I'm not ready to make that proclamation, but I certainly think they're in the conversation. And I think you're very justified in the way that you feel, because it is true in a salary cap era, you know, that the things that you have to go through to balance the cap. And yeah, everybody's going to point at last year and say, well, you know, they sat on Kucherov's injury so that he didn't have to play all year. But the bottom line is, okay, it's the same rules for any other team, whether other teams, you know, whether fans of the other teams like it or not, any team is available to do that. And you start looking, Maddie, I mean, let's not forget when they won their first one, Steven Stamkos, who along with Kucherov and Point, I mean, arguably their best offensive player and easily their leader. What did he play? About three shifts now in the entire playoffs. Now, one of those shifts was the stuff that legends are made with that individual goal that he scored. But you know, he was injured for most of it, and they kept chugging along. You go to last year, and Kucherov coming off that year a little rusty. You go to this year with no point. We're not talking about bit players here. We're talking about Steven Stamkos. We're talking about Braden Point. We're talking about Kucherov. And yet the machine still grinds. And to your point, I think that plays into it as well, if you want to call him one of the greatest dynasties of all time. I mean, I'll still go with that Montreal Canadiens team. I mean, any team, and I don't care if there's a salary cap or not, when you lose just 8 games in an entire season, I think that sets the benchmark high. And as many Hall of Famers that team did have of the mid-70s. But like you said, they didn't have the restrictions that Julien Brisebois, and let's give Steve Yzerman a lot of credit because he built the foundations of this team, so Steve Yzerman as well. They did not have, the shackles of a salary cap. So you're very, very justified in thinking that the way that you do, that this could be the greatest dynasty ever.
Yeah, and let's not forget Sam Pollock stole Guy Lafleur away from the California Golden Seals. That's another thing entirely that we should throw out there. Mike Zeisberger from NHL.com joining Matt Marchese here on the Jeff Merrick Show. Okay, let's kind of hammer down on the Leafs a little bit here. So they let go of Steve Briere, and they're going to reevaluate, you know, the position, how they evaluate the position themselves. And Elliot brought up the point earlier, and this has been brought up before. This team, this organization has not been able to develop a goaltender basically since Felix Potvin. One that comes in, has a good tenure with the team, and then, you know, whatever happens after that, that's fine. But they haven't been able to do that. Is there any way to explain this futility in this regard? Because I don't understand it, and I certainly don't think Steve Briere was the problem, but there's a deeper-rooted problem here, isn't there?
Well, I mean, you go through the list. I mean, you can't just blame it on one regime, but we've gone through a lot of them. But if you look, I mean, they decided to move on from Potvin and go to and get Curtis Joseph. You look Curtis Joseph's body of work in Toronto. You can't argue with that. He leaves and they bring in Ed Belfour. Well, you can't argue with that. Where it started to go, Matty, off the tracks is when they thought that Justin Pogge, one of their draft picks, was going to be the future of the Toronto Maple Leafs goaltending. And they had another prospect that we all know in Tuukka Rask, who they traded away. We all know how that worked out. Pogge, I believe, when last I checked, was playing in Italy somewhere. And Tuukka Rask was setting records for, a very, very rich and fabled Boston Bruins franchise for a lot of records on different categories for goaltenders. So I think that's where it went off the tracks, and they've been trying to chase it ever since. So you can't just blame, I don't think, one aspect of their development. And I mean, let's face it. Let's not do revisionist history here. Freddie Anderson, when they signed him, they got him for a good price. He was at a digestible contract. And look, let's not take away. This guy played well in the regular season. The trouble was, like the rest of the team, they couldn't get off that hump in the playoffs. And we're seeing the same with Jack Campbell now. The trouble is, if you don't develop your own goaltenders, you're always chasing them on the free agent market. And unfortunately that, hoping to hit, and that's what the Leafs have done. They've hit on a couple, but I think, when you hit on a sour one like Peter Mrazek, it costs you not only in what you're left with now, and they're kind of handcuffed, We'll see what happens with Campbell, but also in the salary cap. So the one thing, if you develop your own goalie, you don't have to pay for him for a while. So that's where, you know, you look at a team like Pittsburgh, you know, Matt Murray won a couple of cups with them when it was his time to go and he wanted more money. They just move on, and Tristan Jarry was there to pick up the slack, and, you know, Casey DeSmith as well. So when you look at the way that Pittsburgh has developed goalies and then the way the Leafs haven't, I think you're looking at a tale of two teams right there, just as an example.
Yeah, and it's not like in years past where elite goalies just become free agents. Those guys are signed to long-term extensions. You look at Vasilevsky, you look at Shesterkin, Connor Hellebuck. Like, you can go down the list. The elite goalies just don't get to free agency, so they don't even have the opportunity to chase them.
When they do, and you look at what Florida paid for Bobrovsky, I mean, don't you think that the Panthers, as good a team as they are, you know, would love to have a do-over with that? And that's the trouble. When one does come available, there's teams that are in the position of the Leafs, they're going to overpay to get the top guy. And that's exactly what Florida did with Bobrovsky.
Totally agree. So only three picks in the upcoming draft. They have their own first, Winnipeg's third, and then they have a seventh round pick. So, you know, it's going to be tough sledding unless they start moving guys, which is possible considering the considering that they're going to have to make some moves. Engvall, Kasha, RFAs, Blackwell, Mikheyev, UFAs up front, Liljegren, Sandin, RFAs, Labushkin, UFA, and then Jack Campbell and Nett. They've got about $8 million in cap space. This does feel like a really busy offseason ahead for Kyle Dubas, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And I would say this. There was a lot of doom and gloom last year, too, going into the summer. And the fact that they were able to pick up a cast, the fact that they were able to pick up a Bunting, and these guys were bargains, shows you, I mean, that there is a lot of talent in terms of evaluation with the Leafs. And you know, you gotta wonder, you know, what kind of rabbit they'll pull out of their hat. The one thing that they do have for them, and I've said this for years, is Brandon Pridham, who is kind of the guy that crunches the cap numbers for them. Brandon was with the NHL when the CBA was first written up, with the salary cap included back in 05-06, in that period. So who better to be able to handle a cap than somebody that helped write it? And so I think that is, you know, I always bring it up. I think he is the actual organizational MVP, the way that they can put square financial pegs in round holes. A lot of that has to do with Brandon. So I think it's going to be a busy off season, and somehow, some way, Pridham will find a way to get stuff in there. Now, whether it's the right players, that's going to be up to those that evaluate the talent.
They did Kyle Dubas specifically did a great job getting Mark Giordano locked up. That deal is a sweetheart of a deal. 2 years at well below market value. I think that's great, but it does raise the question, you know, Liljegren needs an extension. Sandin needs an extension. If they sign both guys, they're going to have 7D, and they could probably use the money elsewhere, you know, to, maybe it's trading a Justin Hall or whatever the case may be. Maybe it's Jake Muzzin. Do you think that they're more likely to deal one of their defensemen or one of their forwards and I'm not going to say any of the top four because I don't see that happening, but maybe a guy like Alex Kerfoot who makes, you know, $3.5 million and they can use that money elsewhere?
I think they could do both, Matty. I mean, I think they're going to be very aggressive in what they do. You know, and it's interesting because when I was at the Combine about a week and a half ago, I talked to Arizona general manager Bill Armstrong. And obviously Arizona has been a landing spot for a lot of teams, you know, that are up against the cap and need to get rid of commodities in order to get cap space. And Bill Armstrong said again, like, as the draft gets closer and closer – You know, you look around the league, a lot of teams, it's not just the Leafs, are right up against the cap. And they're going to have to make a lot of moves. I expect it to be very, very busy before the draft because of that very reason and teams wanting to get draft capital back, but more importantly, create cap space. So I think, the draft goes in Montreal early July. I believe it's the 6th and the 7th, somewhere around there. But I think it's going to be really busy, and I expect the Leafs to be significant players in that. And one final thing, Matty, to your point about, you know, trading the top four. I've seen people's wish lists, you know, and a lot of people have talked about, oh, well, maybe you could move John Tavares. Well, Matty, you tell me, what team is going to take that cap hit?
The short answer is no one, Mike. Nobody Thank is going to be taking that cap hit. We're right up against it here, Mike, but as always, you know this. I appreciate your time, and thanks for taking a few minutes for me here. Really appreciate it, buddy.
Anytime, buddy. Keep kicking butt, and I'll be at the finals, so call anytime. Thanks a lot for having me.
There you go. Safe travels to you, sir, and enjoy the cup final. That's Mike Zeisberger from NHL.com. As we wrap up another week of the Jeff Merrick Show, I'd like to thank my guest, Elliot Friedman, who I'm sure we'll get an update at some point on how he did on the golf course today. As always, joins us at the beginning of the show. Matt Calvert, who is great from Cal Sports Management and former Avs forward and Blue Jackets forward as well. Scott Laughlin from NHL Network Radio and Mike Zeisberger, as mentioned. Matt Marchese filling in for the Jeff Merrick Show. Jeff will be back on Monday. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy Game 6. And we'll see you Monday.